On this week's show, good business decisions create better projects with Mike Mantooth from Management Controls. All right. Y'all might notice it is just Mike and I sitting down. This is going to be an interesting ride for us today. Mike, thanks for sitting down with me today.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. Happy to be on your show, man.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. Guys, this is a little bit outside of our normal realm, but I think it's really going to bring a lot of valuable knowledge that I wanted to get. So sometimes I do what I want to do. Well, that's what we're doing today. But remember, if you guys want to catch the shorts, you want to catch what's going on, go to youtube.com/@thecontentcrew. Follow us on all our socials. If you guys haven't noticed, a lot of the shorts and everything are coming out through thecontentcrew.com. Or through the Content Crew on LinkedIn. So follow us there as well. Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Content Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontentcrew.com to learn more. All right, Mike. I'm excited. So Mike Mantooth, Director of Capital Projects for Management Controls. That's your title, that's your company, but you have a heck of a story. So give us a little bit of your background and what you're passionate about.
Yeah. Well, I know it's probably a little far to go back, but I started my own business when I was 13. Lawn care, got a lawnmower, started cutting yards, really got to learn about consumers and customers and what they like, what they don't like. And it's amazing what you'll put up with for $10, right, to cut somebody's grass for an hour. But I'm aging myself there. Anyway, I just came up doing a plethora of jobs. But after college, I got into the steel industry. I actually hired in as a laborer, pushing a broom around a steel mill in Birmingham and waited on a management job to open up. Got involved in operations management, managing union crews and maintenance. And eventually got into procurement because they couldn't find anything I was good at. And that's where you go to pasture in a company like U.S. Steel. So that being said, I became a global contract manager and managed several $1 billion in spend for the North American fleet and ended up purchasing some software to really help U.S. Steel become best in class regarding contractor management. And during that journey, ended up coming over to the software company, which is MCI that I work for now. And so now I get to spend my days really bringing owners and contractors on the same page to help drive best practice in contractor management.
And that's what I thought was really interesting for us to sit down and talk about, because you have this walked a mile in the other shoes and saw some of the problems. So go back to your days at U.S. Steel and talk about what were some of the problems that were driving you to want to find a solution, right? You obviously identified a set of problems. So what were those, especially from that owner perspective?
Yeah. So, you know, I have done work as contractor before and as a subcontractor. It wasn't in the steel industry. It was actually in fire and storm damage. But I did learn about some of the intricacies that are involved when people hire you as a vendor to come do something, and then you do what you think is right by them, and you turn your bill in, and you get a sour look on their face, and you start getting challenged for your charges, which, by the way, after you felt like you've done somebody a good job, is a little intimidating and frustrating, right? Because you felt like they should probably pay you more than you even charged them for. And that being said, when I got into the steel industry and actually saw how, for example, jobs are initiated, how jobs are planned, how jobs are scoped, how jobs are priced from the owner's perspective and handed off to the vendor, what I realize is sometimes the owner puts the vendor at a disadvantage to even perform and meet expectations, okay, because there's so much vagueness and variables that are missing. So when I was working at U.S. Steel, I was a heavy user of contractors. At the site I had, we spent $250 to $350 million a year just to maintain the facility in addition to our own internal employees. And so I got to see a lot of scopes of work and bids and delayed jobs, overbilled jobs, jobs that had change orders. And eventually our board of directors for the company said, enough is enough. We're tired of finding waste, fraud, and abuse in the contractor management process. So me and another guy were actually the first two global contract managers U.S. Steel ever hired to manage all the service contractor spend for North America. That being said, this is the answer to your question. My job was from inception to payment, or cradle to grave, anything that we could do to optimize that relationship between U.S. Steel and the service vendors to drive the cost of work down, that was our job. So that's really what got it on my radar.
And when my contractors hear that, and when my audience hears that, they have that experience we talked about on pre-call of basically owners attacking your billing, attacking your change orders, attacking that. And what I like is you kind of captured this, and it might go all the way back to your lawn care days, but like, you finish blood, sweat, and tears mowing that lawn, and you want that $10, and they're like, well, but you didn't edge over there. You know, you want to feel good about the work. And I think there is this classic, you know, offense, defense here, like we're against each other.
Yep.
So talk a little bit about how that's really antithesis to the process, and what you think it should be.
Yeah. So, and I'll just use U.S. Steel as a reference, but I do want to kind of talk generically, because the company I work for now, we have, you know, 70 customers, and most of them are Fortune 500 companies, and they do business all over the world at over 400 sites. And I've been to a lot of them, from Australia to Singapore to the Netherlands to, you know, Africa, you name it, North America, Canada. So I've had the opportunity to really see a lot of different scenarios and context. But going back to your question, I will kind of narrow it down to North America. In North America, depending on the age of the company that or the owner that the contractor's providing services for, there's an ingrained culture that says, in order to save cost, we have to go get it out of the margin of the vendor, or we have to drive it down through the bidding process. And unfortunately, what's happened with some vendors is they have figured that out, that that's what the owner wants to attack to drive costs down, versus looking at their own internal processes, like how well do we plan work, how well do we scope work, how well do we assign commercial strategy, do we put our vendor in the best position to win, are we the reason they're always delayed, are we the ones not approving their invoices, causing 60-day payment delays, which make them finance money and drive the cost to pay their own workforce up, which then gets recirculated back. You know, forget about that. And the vendor just goes, okay, we'll develop defense mechanisms to hide cost, and we'll tell you what you want to hear, but then we'll charge you in other places. And I call it the pop-a-mole game. I don't know if you ever went to Showbiz Pizza, but I love that game, because you hit one and you feel really good about it until seven more pop up over here. And then you realize that the game has created an environment and it's impossible to win, right? And so it becomes a shell game between owner and contractor. And the question is, what do you do about that? And that's what I was faced with as a global contract manager. What do I do about that?
So, and you were faced with that there, but I love that you went to where you are today. And I think when you went global, those problems were pretty consistent. Was that the experience that when you made the jump, you thought, you know, oh, is this just us? And then you get over there and you realize, no, it's the process. Like, this is the way it is done.
Yeah. So I started in steel. That was really my genesis. But since my U.S. Steel days, I'm in power generation, transmission distribution, oil and gas, pulp and paper, metals and mining, automotive, food. We're breaking into the government, and it's on every continent. There's only one place we're not doing business right now, and that's for another discussion. But it's on every continent. It's with every different type of commercial strategy. It's in seven different languages, with contractors all over the world. And regardless of the vertical or the country, all the problems are systemic. They're systemic issues, from utilizing service contractors to supplement your workforce. And the question becomes, what do you do about it? How do you eliminate those risks? How do you address those systemic issues without jeopardizing the relationship between owner and vendor?
All right. I know you got a bunch of people driving down the road that might be crashing cars right now waiting to hear your answer. What is the answer? What do you do to change that systemic, you know, decade-old problem?
Yep. It's going to sound too simple to be true, but it's really, it's the focus. the owner and the vendor have to change focus from looking across the table at one another and focus on the work, focus on the project, focus on the task, and use their partnership to drive the risk down associated with work. That's the answer. It's that simple.
It sounds way too simple. But
it does sound too simple.
That's part of our problem, right? Like, simplicity is, we really try to make it complicated. Like, I thought we had to create, BIM caves and go and do crazy things. And, you know, when actually truly what those things may be needed in some spaces, but really we have to change our focus. Now, that didn't always, there are some reasons too. This isn't a blame game situation. Like, mm-hmm. we've really, and we talked about this pre-call, like there's some reasons that they couldn't do that before. What were some of those reasons that they really couldn't focus on the risk and attacking it?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's so many of those categories. I'm only going to pick a couple to address. And if you want to tease those out or go into others, we can. But let's just talk about commercial strategy, for example. Most companies, most owner companies have what I call preferred commercial strategies. And vendors learn this pretty quickly, that if I'm going to go work for Department A, they like doing lump sum work. Therefore, I need to, you know, build into my overhead and profit and margin and scope enough contingency to cover the unknown, because that's what they're going to do, versus Department B likes T&M work. So I really need to go construct a rate to accommodate that within the organization. But really and truly, commercial strategy is a byproduct of definition on scope. So one thing I've always said, and I learned earlier in my career, is scope is king. And it always has been, and it always will be. But unfortunately, if an owner has commercial strategies as king and scope becomes secondary, it immediately puts the work at a disadvantage. And it puts the vendor at a disadvantage, and it puts the owner at a disadvantage, because they're focusing on the wrong thing. Commercial strategy is not what you focus on to drive contractor management best practice. You also can't focus on cheapest price. If any owner could say, we've all picked vendors based on price and it burned us later because they weren't qualified, they weren't efficient, they weren't productive, and you ultimately get what you pay for. I still believe that too. But if you look at it from the vendor side, the contractor side, how do you change that with, you know, the owner's perspective? What can you introduce as a vendor to say, look, I understand that you love lump sum work, but this doesn't feel like a lump sum type job. There's not enough definition. There's not enough forecastable, predictable variables in this job for me to truly give you a competitive price that should be associated with this kind of work. So that's where I really like to say, when we change focus, the first thing that accompanies that is transparency. When an owner and a vendor become transparent with one another, and they quit focusing on the other party, and they start talking about the work, and they say, you know what, this work doesn't really have a very well-defined scope of work. How can we get more definition behind that? Now you're on to something. Versus, should I do this lump sum or time and material? That's the tail wagging the dog. And that's just one example.
Now, I want to dig into it a little bit more, because that planning and that definition around scope, especially coming from the trade side of things and even the GC side of things, it does drive up the cost, because you don't know what you don't know. You have to plan for it. So, but that transparency is scary to both sides. It really is. It's sort of a leap. Have you got any hints on, you know, how companies can get over that hump and get through that? Because it's breaking that glass ceiling. When you break it, great things happen, but how can they break that glass ceiling?
Yeah. I'm not going to say unfortunately, because that sounds like someone's at a disadvantage, but it really takes boldness from both the vendor or the owner to be able to break that, because it can sound like an indictment, right? If a vendor goes to an owner and goes, hey, thanks for this scope of work, but I don't feel comfortable giving you a price for this that's competitive, because there's so much unknown here. Right. And obviously, from an owner's perspective, the question is, well, how much money do you anticipate me spending to give you more definition? Because I have planners and schedulers, and I don't want to just go out there and let them spend hours and hours and hours trying to give you scope definition. So why can't you just do what your competitors are doing and just give me a price? You know, and by the way, we don't have 2 months to do this. This isn't a capital project. This is for a shutdown we're having in 72 hours kind of thing. So there's a lot of variables involved in how you break the ceiling, but it still goes back to vulnerability. If the owner senses that the contractor's being transparent and that they're being vulnerable, good owner companies should embrace that. And it's been my experience, both at my previous employer at U.S. Steel, but also with our customers that we partner with, is they pick up on that pretty quickly from vendors, and the vendor will eventually benefit from it. But you're right. It does take a little bit of a leap of faith at first.
And I have heard that over and over. And the problem is, you know, you're bidding that work out and you've got three other people mm-hmm. bidding, and you're just one of four. You're 25%. You're not 75% of that equation. So it's hard to yep. come from that angle. But when an owner sees that and makes that decision to go ahead and say, okay, we're going to, on this scope or this project, we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. What are some of the benefits that you've seen that kind of get uncovered by that transparency, that vulnerability, the connection?
Yep. So I'm going to talk about it from both perspectives, both the owner and the vendor. So from an owner's perspective, owners, especially procurement and buyers, they stay up at night worrying that they're being hosed, that they're getting overcharged, that they're paying more than all their competitors, than all the other verticals. And that's one of the reasons why they constantly try to attack margin, because they're also in competition with other companies, right? U.S. Steel wasn't the only steel company. So by driving the cost of work down, we're competing in our markets more. So the vendor experiences that from their side, the owners experience that from their side as well. So I would say from a vendor's perspective, the first thing that you should really do is be transparent about your margin. Now, I'm not saying you got to do that down to the penny, but when you build out a time and material rate, make note of why things are the way they are. You know, why do you need this amount of money for overhead and profit? You know, how much wages are you really incurring? Why are you using a unionized workforce versus a non-unionized workforce? Why are you providing all this safety apparel, PPE cost, and reimbursable cost within your rate? And explain why that's necessary, because what you may find out is that the owner doesn't require that, or that's beyond their expectations, and you can actually reel it back and lower your price. And that goes back to transparency. If you're not transparent with your margin and your rate buildup from a time and material perspective, owners get very, very reluctant. Okay. And same thing goes with lump sum. When you bid work, if you're not transparent with your bid and you just give this cover page with a price on it, that's a red flag for an owner. Procurement 101 says if there's no definition behind their bid, if there's no buildup to it, it's already in last place, you know? And here's why, because it's like, well, what are they hiding? How much money are they really making on this? Yep. It could be the most competitive price you've ever supplied. You could be losing money to buy business, which is another problem that happens, right? From an owner's perspective, you have people trying to break into the market. They're underbidding on purpose just to kind of get you working with them. And then they're going to slowly build that back up. But if things are transparent up front, the owner doesn't worry about that, because they kind of know what your margin is. But that's scary to a vendor company for a lot of different reasons. And it's because now what if their competitor isn't sharing that margin with the owner and they're still beating your price? And so I'm not going to say that there's risk in this relationship for vendor companies, because again, what I say is this isn't something that a vendor is just going to do right off the bat to kind of start the conversation and go, hey, Mr. Owner, I want more business. I want a better relationship. Here's my margin. You know, that's not the way that's not the meeting the vendor wants to have with the owner. The meeting goes something like this. Hey, you know, I don't know where you're at right now, but I really want to partner with you to drive the cost of work down that you award to me. And I've got some very logical steps that I would like to propose to you not give you, but propose to give you, but I would also need that same transparency and vulnerability from you. And that's what's happening with our vendor companies and our owner companies. They're not showing their cards yet. They're just inviting both parties to the table. So
it's like a therapy session, right? Like both parties have to be willing to show up to therapy to talk and to be honest and transparent in the room. But that's where true change is happening. It is. Yeah. And so are you seeing, like, since you've come over, are you seeing a growth in owners and vendors adopting this kind of relationship? And then what are they using? You know, because I don't want to not talk a little bit about what y'all do, but are they adopting it? Are they embracing it? And do you think it's starting to get, you know, what do you think the trend looks like? Is this just a couple of people or what are we looking at?
Yeah. So you may have to remind me of the question because I just thought of something that I wanted to do to give credibility to what I'm about to say, because what I'm about to say sounds crazy. But I'm a member of the ECC Association based out of Houston, and it's a collection of owner companies, EPCs, general contractors, and third-party vendors that support that ecosystem. And for the past 3 years, the solution that I'm promoting here has been discussed on stage from numerous different spokespeople, from EPC owners all the way down to project managers, capital people, turnaround people, routine maintenance people for Fortune 500 owner companies. So this isn't anything new that I'm coming up with, is what I'm trying to tell you. But here's the answer. When owner companies and contractors focus on driving the cost of work down versus attacking each other's margins, what happens is work becomes the thing that energy is poured into and the thing that you now mitigate risk around. So, for example, I love these two examples. You know, I'm in my office right now and it's very defined and measurable. So if I wanted somebody to come in here and paint that, I could give them a very easy scope of work to do that. And they should be able to give me a very easy lump sum price to accommodate what I would need. Versus if I saw water bubbling out of my yard in front of my window. Well, why would I allow somebody to hard bid that job? I don't know how deep the pipe is, how big the pipe is. Is it a sewage line? Is it a freshwater line? Is it my neighbor's water running downhill coming up in my yard? Like, I have no idea. I just need you to dig the thing up and figure out what's next. So the thing that is what I would call best in class today is once you define scope, and the vagueness that's in the scope, which, by the way, is part of scope definition, is defining that you don't know what needs to happen. You can now build that into the scope to say, look, this section of the scope, we're going to do it for this amount of money in this commercial strategy. This section of the scope, when we get to that phase, we actually have to come back to the table and renegotiate how we're going to address that. And you have to have an agile commercial strategy and relationship. But in order for the vendor to sign up for that, the owner has to commit work to them, you know? So there is that partnership aspect. So if the vendor is going to be transparent and vulnerable to the owner has to commit to do that with the vendor. But the most important piece of this is you have to have a solution. And I'm not promoting ours, but I do think it's the best in the world at what it does and to support this ecosystem. The owner has to have a solution that gives the transparency and visibility of the data incurred that burns against the scope, like hours and cost, so that you can make business decisions in real time. And you can't have that data a week after the fact. Like, I need to know in real time, how am I trending against my plan? And when I get to a place where I don't have definition, do I really trust that I have a solution that could handle that with a T&M rate? Again, I've already disclosed my margin, so the owner should be happy with what I bill them at that point. But those are the things that the ECC world is talking about. And on bigger projects where timing and duration become a constraint and schedule, like turnaround events or capital projects that have short spans, they're doing profit sharing. So they'll literally allow EPCs to come in and bid competitively, win the bid, execute based on lump sum, fixed fee, reimbursable, T&M. And if the EPC beats their plan, owners are writing them a profit sharing check for the delta. Now, vendors think there's no way that if I bid on a, you know, a $100 million job and I beat it by 100 mil or 10 million, that I'm going to get 20% of that just on top of what I've already earned. But think about it from the owner's perspective. I just did that job for 8% less than I thought I was going to do it, even writing you what I would consider icing on the cake on top of the margin you've already earned. And so these are the kind of best practice commercial strategies and scope executions that we're seeing on the market these days. And that was kind of a bigger one, but they can be done on jobs as low as $10,000.
We've heard of these. And by the way, ECC, if you guys didn't listen in last year, Tanis and I and Nathan Wood did a live podcast from the ECC Future Leaders where I got introduced to that group.
Yeah.
Incredible group of people, incredible group of companies, really forward thinking. Hey, little hint, I'm looking forward to getting back there this year if I can to their national events. But we are looking to, in our world where I sit, to these EPCs because the relationship, I wouldn't say is less complicated, but yep, it's a little less complicated. And the work, by the way, is a lot more frequent and predictable. Because in our world, we've seen a lot of those projects where we were going to get those checks not necessarily happen. And I think that's because of a lack of controls of exactly what you're talking about, a system of controls like management controls that can really show to everybody, this is how we got here.
Yep.
And that's the beauty of transparent systems that track and manage work, because we know what we know and we both know it. And that makes it even and allows for that owner to feel good about cutting that check and that contractor good about not fluffing in work to burn to that 100 million, because they're quote unquote losing something if they come in at 90 million. But what's not being calculated is to go to that 100 million, then you're looking at all those other spends that then come to the profit, where that 10%, 20% check, that's pure profit without risk. And who doesn't love profit without risk, man? That's a critical component of this.
No, that's right. And, you know, our solution, for example, it doesn't benefit the owner or the vendor. Honestly, even though it's typically purchased by the owner, it's representative of the scope and what's happening against the work and the actuals. So it gives the vendor and the owner a place to go track in real time what's happening and being burned against the scope of work. And the beauty of this is before this, when I was a global contract manager, we would require the vendor to produce this type of information. They don't have a bullpen of people to do this. So they would have to hire people and be like, well, I guess if you want real-time reporting for all the hours and, you know, things that were burning against this and in real time, then I got to hire two people to do that. And it's like, oh, there you go again, trying to get into my pocket and drive my cost up and da da da. And it's like, well, hold on. Didn't you just ask me to do this? Why don't you do it? And it becomes a, he said, you know, like a battle. They butt heads. The beauty of our solution is, it's agnostic. It's just going to take actuals versus the plan and put it on the table for the owner and the vendor to make business decisions off of. And this is kind of, you know, with scope comes contraction and expansion. It just happens. And delays, you know, and those delays can be acts of God. Those delays can be operational. Those delays can be from contractors. I've got stories from all three that impact costs and schedule. And ultimately, if you have a software that tells you why that happened, it takes the emotion out of the cost going up or the cost going down, because now the owner knows, no, it wasn't the vendor just trying to get into my pocketbook, or the vendor saying, no, it wasn't them just trying to get into my margin. It's right there. The software calculated what was earned and why it was delayed and the extra cost that the project incurred. So now, again, that partnership can go try to go mitigate and figure out another way to optimize the project's cost.
And there's another one. It's trust through transparency. Now we trust each other. And there are going to be times where the owner and the owner's team quote unquote created the problem, right? For whatever reason, like you just said, and vice versa, where the vendor has created the problem or has experienced the problem. That could be number of different reasons, like you talked about, acts of God, weather, you know, hey, look, global supply chain issues. Not like we haven't seen those recently. Like this is a volatile market too. And I think also during that volatility that we're experiencing now, we're going to continue to experience, having a platform that levels the playing field for all of us to focus again. Like you said, we could end up in the next year or 2 years really fighting with each other and really damaging relationships, damaging projects, damaging what we need. And what you're saying is, instead of attacking each other and playing defense against each other, we can play offense against this risk and produce the best outcome possible, right? We can't eliminate everything, but we can build different outcomes.
You know, risk is a buzzword in the industry, and I want to provide a little definition from my perspective, both when I was an owner, but even from the seat I'm in now, and it's this right here. When we say that best-in-class owners and contractors want to mitigate risk associated with work, I need to talk about what they typically do with it today from the owner's perspective. So contractors, if you're listening, and I hope you are, this is what your owner walks into the meeting, the bid meeting with. They have commercial risk in their head associated with a job, and this is the four options that they have. The first thing they can do is own it. They can own the risk. And if they're going to do this, this is typically where they're not going to give you as much authority and autonomy to make decisions to optimize and be productive with it. And they're going to, in some cases, micromanage it. And they're going to want to do that typically with time and material rates. The second thing they're going to want to do is transfer the risk, which means they want you to own it, which means now you have to build in your risk premium or contingency, but you also have to do that competitively because your other competition is going to be having to do the same thing. The third thing, and believe it or not, this still happens, they ignore it. They act as if it doesn't exist, and they just go about their preferred commercial strategies, and then they want to get into really hot debated arguments with you later when you try to increase the cost of the work. But the fourth thing that they have the ability to do now in 2025, and I would say best-in-class companies are doing this, they want to mitigate the risk associated with work. So they don't want you to own it. They don't want to own it. They're certainly not going to ignore it, but they want to partner together with you to let the job own it. And if the job owns it, which by the way, the job owns it anyway, now how can we mitigate it in relation to the job? That's where we can really start getting creative with one another to drive the cost of work down. Not at the expense of the vendor's margin, not at the expense of a change order to the owner.
That's really powerful. And I do like that you broke down risk because it is a hot buzzword. And I don't think enough of the trade contractors and GCs in my world understand exactly what you just described and what's going through their heads. And if we can understand what's going through their heads, then we can, in our process of helping them, provide a better definition to make help them make a better decision. I do want to go back to, because you nailed it, and the question that we did miss was, is this process in this relationship, do you think it's growing? I mean, is it just an elite few, or do you think this is a trend that the listeners here and in that world should really perk up to and realize?
Yep. So there's two aspects. And the first one I'm going to talk about is probably applicable to less than 3% of the people listening. If you're a startup, this is how you should enter into every conversation with an owner company, that you want to partner with them to mitigate the risk associated with work, and you want to be transparent and vulnerable and really help them on a journey that you could see into the future. The rest of us, we're probably not living in that environment. We probably have got some black eyes from past deals. We're probably in the middle of a shell game as we speak. And the question is, how do you get out of that cycle? And that's going to take change. Now, look, I got a new smart device 2 months ago, and I put it off for like 5 years. I nearly had a flip phone because I don't like change. and I don't like learning what new buttons are doing and how to use the technology. But at the end of the day, if we live in a complacent place, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to thrive. Nothing is going to change. So somebody has to initiate that. And what I'm telling the listeners today is good companies, good owner companies are willing to have these conversations for contractors who initiate them. A few of the companies are initiating without the contractors even bringing it up. Most companies, they're waiting on contractors to come, you know, hold out the olive branch, if you will.
Well, I heard a couple of things from that. I want that to be your mic drop, because really, if you're a startup and you're getting started, this is your strategic advantage. If you are one of those companies that's been going on, you had those black eyes, it's time to kind of get over the past and look at this again as a strategic advantage to win more longer term, higher profit work. And we know this business is a relationship business. I hear it everywhere I go. I believe in it. But those relationships need to change in order to drive better outcomes and reach the opportunities that exist. So, and who doesn't love that the guy representing the software company in pushing for change has the vulnerability to say he doesn't love the change himself? So,
yeah, Mike, it's hard.
You've been an awesome guest today, man. Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Mike Mantu. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.